Good evening. And it is a good evening. For Friday the 13th, we have a nice day. For any day, we have a nice day. Barbara Marks Hubbard has been called the voice for conscious evolution of our time by Deepak Chopra, and is the subject of Neil Donald Walsh's new book, The Mother of Invention. By the way, can you hear me reasonably well with that feedback? Because I'm hearing all kinds of feedback. Are you okay with that? Yes, good. A prolific author, visionary, social innovator, evolutionary thinker, and educator, Barbara is co-founder and chairperson of the Foundation for Conscious Evolution. She is the producer and narrator of the award-winning documentary series entitled Humanity Ascending, A New Way Through Together, and has recently partnered with the Shift Network as a global ambassador for the conscious evolution movement, a shift from evolution by chance towards evolution by choice. Along with Stephen Guinan, she has launched the Agents of Conscious Evolution Training and is forming a global team to co-produce a global multimedia event entitled Birth 2012, Creating a Planetary Shift in Time on December 22nd, 2012. A historic turning point event awakening the social, spiritual, scientific, and technological potential of humanity. In 1984, Barbara's name was placed in nomination for the Vice Presidency of the United States on the Democratic ticket, calling for a peace room to scan for, map, connect, and communicate what is working in America and around the world. Barbara also co-chaired a number of Soviet American citizen summits, introducing a new concept called SynCon, to foster synergistic convergence with opposing groups. She developed SynCon conferences to bring together opposing forces to discover the positive benefit of a long-range Earth space development program, where she worked with builders of the space shuttle and continued her passion for an expanded and peace-generating space program. Now, as part of the introduction, we're going to see a few minutes of humanity ascending as a DVD. I'll bring the screen down.
States dropped the first atomic bombs on Japan. I was 15 years old. After the shock of this awful power, this terrible destruction, a great question arose in my mind that has guided my entire life. And here is the question. What is the meaning of all our new powers that is good? What are positive images of the future equal to all our new powers, namely science and technology? Where is Western civilization going? Where is human civilization going that we want to go toward? And I naturally felt somebody knew. So I started a quest through reading for the world philosophies and the world religions for an image of our future equal to our new power. And I couldn't find it. The powers were so new. I invite you to come on this great journey with me so that we can find a new way through together, equal to our spiritual, social, and scientific technological capacities.
Now it is my privilege and great pleasure to introduce Barbara Marks Hubbard.
Thank you so much.
I don't need my microphone, do I?
Yeah.
Or this?
Yes. You know, this evening has a lot of deep meaning for me. I first came to Mind Supermind in 1980. And somehow knew that when I saw this place, that there would be something in my life that would change. And I was up at that beautiful Mount Calvary Monastery that burned down. And I spent a lot of time there really experiencing what might be the meaning of our new power. In that particular time in my life, I was reviewing the New Testament from the perspective of a futurist that began to look at it and see when Jesus said, "You will do the works that I do, and greater works than these will you do in the fullness of time, because I go to the Father." It struck me as a futurist that that's absolutely true. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, and the trumpet shall sound in St. Paul. And I just began to have a very deep spiritual relationship to Santa Barbara as a place of, for me, emergence of what I might call an evolutionary spirituality. That at that time I had no framework for, I had no guidance as to what it might be. And then I came back here. And in 1998, that's a long stretch from 1980 to 1998, I did a couple of things in between, but I got jumped back here in 1998 to Mind Supermind. And I gave a talk on conscious evolution at that time. And it was at the Libero Theater. And I remember it was a very enthusiastic group of people, somewhat like this. And at the end, as a complete throwaway question, because of people being enthusiastic, I said, "I wonder what would happen if this community realized its potential for self and social evolution as a community. Would anybody be interested?" And half the audience raised their hand. So, you know that box that you just showed up there? There was a box there at the Mind Supermind in 1998. So I said, "Well, how about putting all your name in a box?" And they did. And I came back here and moved to Santa Barbara in 1998, 1999. And there, probably, how many people in this group were there at that time? A lot. A lot of people in this, that's really wonderful. You see how touching that is to my heart. That we formed a little seed group at the time. And the seed group was to see actually what would happen to us if we came together to experience that self and social evolution as a small group that lived in this community. Because it's so often as a speaker, you go and speak somewhere, and no matter what happens, everybody goes back to where they live. But here we had a very unusual opportunity for about 5 years to deepen our understanding. And I'll tell you a little bit about that in just a moment. Many, many deep relationships and discoveries were born. And then it started to grow again. And I shifted my life onto the teleseminar world. And I began to enter what I call the noosphere, the thinking layer of Earth in the internet. And when you're speaking to people all over the world on a little telephone or looking into a camera, I began to realize that we actually were and are that thinking layer of Earth coming alive. A mass new nervous system for humanity is forming. And when I get on that teleseminar, and there's a little camera in my office and a little phone beside my desk, and there are people all over the world, and I look into the empty camera and I say, hello, and we're all here. And I coined a new word for it. It's every here. Instead of everywhere. I'm here in Australia. I'm here in Bali. I'm here in New York. I'm here in California. We're all here. So I have been mainly on the teleseminar world. And so actually seeing you all face to face is a very great privilege for me. So I want to tell you, I'm going to tell you at the end what just happened about 3 nights ago to me. And I was in here in Santa Barbara. I think another turn on my spiral has happened. So I'd like to start out this talk to just give a brief overview of where I think we are now, and then make some points as to what I think might be coming next, and possibly coming next year in Santa Barbara, as well as all around the world. So just the first thing I would like to say is it's obvious to everybody now that we've hit a crisis that can't be resolved by doing more of the same. We have overgrown the womb of Earth. The self-conscious, ever-growing humanity in a finite system cannot survive. When I graduated from college in 1951, we were told that most of the problems on Earth had been solved. 1951. And my generation didn't have a clue. We didn't even know we had an environment to protect. We didn't even know we had a population problem. In fact, we were told, get married, have as many babies as possible, build a lot, and just grow. My entire generation was trained to do almost exactly the wrong thing. So when this, let's say starting in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and now up to the year 2012, has been a very rapid tutorial for humanity to do something that we never knew we had to do before. We are the first generation in the history of humanity, but not in the history of nature itself, where a species is on the threshold of making itself extinct. The only difference between us and other species that have come before us, which millions are now extinct, is that we are the first species that know we can make ourselves extinct by our own action. And therefore, we're the first species to wake up to the possibility that we not only can stop that which is destructive, which we must do, but by the very same powers that we could destroy our environment, other species, and ourselves, we have the possibility of evolving ourselves. And what you learn when you study chaos theory, something that is really very interesting, my teacher in this respect is Irvin Laszlo, and his book, Chaos Point, is very clear on this. When a system is far from equilibrium, it can't stabilize the way it is. So it tends to try to go back to a more stable state. And I think we can see in all the reactionary politics, in the reactionary fundamentalists of different kinds, in the tendency to try to hold on to the way things are, we see that disequilibrium and the tendency to be reactionary. Have you noticed?
Yes.
Totally. Here's the good news. It can't work. It can't work. So you can try to hold on to the past or go back, but you can't stabilize it. So what happens in this time of disequilibrium is the system inevitably seeks another trajectory. And if it can find a higher pattern of greater synergy, greater consciousness, greater compassion, greater connectedness, the system will jump quickly. If it does not find such a higher pattern, it can go down quickly. And we happen to be born at that exact moment of that disequilibrium. So they say that in a sea of social chaos, small fluctuations can jump the system very quickly to a higher order. And it's my sense that all the movements that have been growing since the 60s, 70s, 80s, starting with the women's movement and the civil rights movement and the consciousness movement and the futurist movement and the peace movements are all movements that are moving toward that small fluctuation. And there's just one more second of connectivity that is required. This is my evolutionary theory. That if that which is creative, compassionate, evolving connects one more degree, we might actually find ourselves being that small fluctuation that can jump the system. And if you look at the news, it looks like all of that's impossible and just idealism. But if you realize that nature has been taking these kind of jumps for billions of years, you get a different perspective on the crisis, right? So I got a different perspective on the crisis. And my friend Claudia Wells has coined a word for this particular way of looking at things. And she calls it evo-mimicry. We've all heard of biomimicry, is learning how nature grows so that we can grow as nature does. And that's essential. But that's not enough if you're heading in to an evolutionary quantum jump. The only way you can find the lessons of what to do if you're in a crisis that can't be adjusted by doing more of the same or learning even how nature is doing it right now, what you have to do is step back and get evolutionary eyes. And those of you who know me well have heard me speak of this, but I just want to briefly describe to you what happens when you get evolutionary eyes, when you look at the story of cosmogenesis, when you look at the 13.7 billion years of evolution. What lessons do you learn if you take it from the point of ego mimicry? Learning how nature has evolved up the chain of complexity for billions and billions of years. And you place yourself in that sequence, you begin to see how the lessons of the past jumps apply to this jump. So here are a few obvious lessons of the past in the study of ego mimicry. And the first lesson is that crises precede transformation. Nature uses crises to take jumps. And it's very interesting. Problems are evolutionary drivers. Just take those two lessons. And I'm not going to take time now to look at different turns in the spiral, but let's just assume that for the moment to be accurate. What happens is you actually change your attitude to all the crises going on Earth. You see that the crisis, whether it be an environmental crisis, a social crisis, a political crisis, a personal crisis, if you look deeply at it, is a driver that has to make something change or cause destruction. It's so obvious that nobody here is really saying we have to preserve our civilization the way it is. It's too much inequality, too much destructiveness, too much financial inequality, too much just simply the unfairness of the existing culture of humanity. So the crises that we're facing are forcing us to transform or not. So if you're in the futurist movement and you recognize that crises precedes transformation and problems are evolutionary drivers, then you say, well, how did nature take those jumps out of these crises? And the next lesson is nature takes jumps through greater synergy, through the connecting of separate parts to make new whole systems greater than the sum of the parts. Now, Elizabeth Sartoris, the evolution biologist, is really good on this subject, and she points out that when a species is young, it's immature, and it tends to overpopulate, pollute, overshoot its environment, compete with itself and with other species. And at that time, either it learns synergy with its environment and with other species, or it's extinct. Nature selects for what cooperates best. It's a really great lesson that at this very point, when you can see the competitiveness and the misuse of power, is exactly the moment to cultivate that which is connecting, that which is creative, that which is synergistic. And if nature is an example to us in this particular instant, we can see that there's a potentiality for us to take a jump to a higher order civilization. And that's just a moment. Piece together all the movements, all the innovations in health, education, conscious business, new energy systems, new forms of management, evolutionary and more compassionate spirituality, and you put that all together and you imagine it to be the connectivity available to us in a whole system shift, you actually see that there is already a new world emerging in our midst. But it's not visible, and we certainly don't see it on the news. Because the news is an infantile nervous system. It has a disease which I call disempathitis of the mass media. And the disease is its dead on empathy. It doesn't pick up emergence. It doesn't pick up the frequency of what hasn't yet fully manifested itself. So when you have evolutionary eyes and you start scanning through all the sectors of human endeavor for what's emerging, innovative, compassionate, and creative, and imagine it connecting as a whole system shift, coming up out of the whole system breakdown, you begin to get a sense of direction for what kind of society are we actually wanting to create? And right now, there's almost no vision of a future equal to our power, equal to our potentiality. And I want to talk to you in a moment about the actual evolution of democracy itself, which I think is where we are at this stage of evolution. And I'd like to show that graphic of my wheel. Can I show the spiral in the wheel for a minute? I will come down and show it, and then I'll come back up. Is that the best way to do it? I want to show you a diagram that makes all of this so simple. So I don't get hit by that. Sweet. Okay. All right. Oh, this is no problem. I think if we can have a slightly, yeah, that's perfect. Okay, this is a basic diagram to look at what I'd like to show you as I think what evil men are creating, what nature is leading us toward. Can you hear me when I talk like this?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so there, what this leaves out right here is a little golden glow, which is the mind of God. That's left out of this picture. I'm sorry, it's off the screen. Oh, there it goes. So, the mind of God, the mind of the cosmos, the infinite intelligence of universe. You see, this is the formation of the universe, and then here's our local spiral, earth, life, animal life, human life. And you see there the core of the spiral, that is my just simple graphic definition of the impulse of evolution, the implicate order, the spirit in action, the evolving Godhead, whatever word anybody would like to take from the origin of creation up through every turn in the spiral and see it as a force that is now entering into the center of that wheel. And the center of that wheel represents to me like the hub of our society. We could say right now we're in a hub together. It's a place where the impulse of evolution that's in each of our hearts, that is our own spiritual motivation to give, to be, to evolve, to do, where that spiritual impulse becomes a shared and collective experience of the emergence of a new culture. Do you feel like in this room, how many of us feel that impulse of evolution coming through as our own desire to be, to express, to give? Okay. So if we ever get to the way of sharing that impulse, it's not a new religion, and it's not even a new spirituality, but it is a new condition on earth, that enough of us are awakening internally and evolving internally to be ever more sensitive to the impulse of evolution as our own motivation to evolve. And I actually see it symbolized there as the hub of the wheel. And I've been teaching recently that we could look at the hub symbolically as a new sacred space. We've had the temples, the mosques, the churches, where people gather to deepen their spirituality, mainly in relationship to the existing cosmologies, the old stories of creation. What we have here, inclusive of all the great religions and mystical paths of the past, but we have a new story. We have a new cosmology. We have the discovery of cosmogenesis. We have, everything has changed because we are coming from an evolving universe. We're in the story, as the story, ready to shift the story by tuning in to the process of creation within us. And I personally believe that the crises that we're facing, which are serious enough to possibly cause the destruction of civilization and our own environment, is precisely the degree of problem, evidently, that we needed to shift the system. But we can't shift the system from the existing top-down structures. Do you remember, like, Obama's campaign, how that felt? There was a moment of resonance. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. But what happened when he got up there to the top? Stuck. Oppositional. There's a tendency to control domination and opposition at the top of most existing structures. It's a principle of rising impotence. It's harder and harder to change the higher and higher you get into existing positions of power. So as we join together in the center of that wheel symbolically, there's a little circle around that that I call the communion of pioneering souls. And the communion of pioneering souls is just a tender word to describe people anywhere on earth, from any culture, any age, any tradition, who feel within themselves that desire to emerge, to realize more potential, to give more love, to give more of their true life purpose. How many people are there like that? Enough. That's my guess. We don't know because we haven't found out yet. But if you think in all the different traditions and cultures, at the growing edge of every one of them, it's something that I first learned in my reading of Teilhard de Chardin. And he said that he thought there was a new kind of human coming on Earth. He called it Homo progressivus. And he said there were two types, Homo progressivus and the other were the bourgeois. Homo progressivus had a quality of a mysterious sense of the future and the flame of expectation burning in their heart. Now, is there anybody in this room who has a flame of expectation for what's emerging in your heart? Okay, this is a little communion of pioneering souls here. And he said that what was going to happen is because you can't, the ones who were trying to control the situation, that was way back, he wrote this probably in the 50s. Well now, you know, here we are in 2012, these enormous reactive movements to try to hold the situation can't go back. So what's really happening is that Homo progressivus, the ones with the flame of expectation and the sense of emergence, are cropping up all over the earth. And I wouldn't be surprised that we'll see that Mother Earth is giving birth to a new life form here. She gave birth to bacteria, gave birth to single cells, to animals, to humans, to all these brilliant technologies, and to humans with the power of the mind to understand nature, to destroy it. But I also, in this very instant when the system could go either way, there is no reason to assume that self-conscious, self-centered Homo sapiens sapiens is the final model. Why would it stop here? If I were nature, I wouldn't stop here. Nobody asked me, but I feel that when I read that from Teilhard de Chardin, I was living in Lakeville, Connecticut, a mother of five children, and I swear I had never met a Homo progressivus. There weren't any in the very early 60s in Lakeville, Connecticut. But I did meet one or two later, and it made a huge difference to me to meet even one person in those days that could see that this desire in me to express and be more was good rather than neurotic. That was a big step forward. And those you know me know this story, but I'll tell it just briefly because I think it's still true of people. I was a mother of five in Lakeville. I was writing in my journal. I was writing letters to everybody. I didn't know what was wrong with me because I had this irresistible desire to participate in a broader way in the creation of a better future.
Well, in Lakeville, Connecticut, with five children, that was really not, you had to go to the psychiatrist.
So, anyway, I was writing letters to all sorts of people, and one of them happened to fall on the desk of Dr. Jonas Salk. And in it, I had heard that he was trying to create a theater of man, and this theater of man was to dramatize how nature had evolved and how we could learn from nature so humans could evolve. And I wrote him a letter. I said, I just think this is a great idea, and this is how I think you should do it. So he called me up. And he said, Mrs. Hubbard, this is Dr. Salk. We are two peas in the same genetic pod. Could I take you to lunch? Now, that was the first time I'd heard the voice of another homo progressivist. And I could tell. It was a frequency. And when I met him, and he took me from Connecticut to New York, and I was telling him all the things that were wrong with me. I had this attraction for the future. I think there's more coming. I could participate in it. And of course, you know, it's neurotic. He said, Barbara, that's not what's wrong about you, that's what's right about you. You are an evolutionary mutant. This is coming from Dr. Salk. So he knew what he was talking about. But he said, I'm going to introduce you to three other people that I met. It took me 25 years to find them. See, now this is really the reason I'm mentioning this. Think of how many there are of us now. And when he introduced me to these other people, every single time, it reinforced the inner flame. And it set me on my path. I realized I'm a universal human. I'm an evolutionary woman. I'm a feminine co-creator. The force of, you can take that screen up. But I don't need that anymore. Is it probably better if I stand up there? If you could just, yes, thank you, Spencer. It occurred to me that this type of human was normal. Not in any way abnormal or unusual or an extra norm, but a new norm. Now that was in the early 60s. If you go from the early 60s to 2012, and you think of all the movements and all the young people out there who are totally tuned in to all of this, and the 4.7 billion cell phones in this world, and Facebook to be the third largest nation in the world. That's the latest figure, and of course, all these other very sophisticated means of communication, where the information of both the problems, the dangers, the new ideas are spread rapidly throughout the world. That's an enormous shift from the late 50s, 1951 when I graduated from college, to 2012. I would say we've hit a critical mass shift. And just as the news of these larger environmental crises are coming in, just exactly at this moment, the noosphere, or thinking layer of Earth, is about to get its collective eyes. And this is a very deep insight from Teilhard de Chardin that influenced my life profoundly. And he was a Catholic Jesuit, a paleontologist, not published by the church in his lifetime. Is there anyone here who has not heard of Teilhard de Chardin? A few, yes. He's probably one of the founders of what I would think of as evolutionary spirituality. And he believed then, before we had internet or any of this, that at some point, the noosphere, the mind sphere, would connect heart with heart and center with center, and that we would wake up, they called it the noosphere would get its collective eyes, and in his language, since he was a Christian, he called it the Christification of Earth. It was a radical expression and connection of empathy worldwide.
Now, when you think of how close we are to empathy, connecting, you've seen it in all these terrible crises, in the tsunamis, in the hurricanes, in the earthquakes, suddenly we're able to feel with people anywhere on Earth. And there is definitely a massive spread of empathy. There's an uprising of spirituality. Is that true within us? That impulse is awakening. I mean, it doesn't have a name. And it isn't a new religion. I think it's a person who's embodying the spirit of creation as their own yearning to evolve. Does that make sense? Does that feel right? Well, this has not been fully named yet. This has not been made public. This is still not the news, but it's happening. And when Teilhard said, at some point, the noosphere will get its collective eyes, that was along the time I met Jonas Salk and read about Homo Progressivus. The minute I read that, I got my life purpose. I knew intuitively that I was here with so many millions of other people to participate in that experience of connectivity and empathy that would be enough to shift consciousness on Earth. And one of the things that in the lessons of evolution, crisis precedes transformation. Problems are evolutionary drivers. Nature jumps through greater synergy. And the next lesson is the tendency in evolution is to greater complexity, greater consciousness, greater freedom through more complex order. That's a multi-billion year trend. From no thing at all the up the chain of complexity, from single cells to animals to humans to us, to a world complexifying so rapidly that we are able to shift whole systems, to overthrow dictators, to spread the word almost instantaneously around the planet. We haven't quite awoken to the reality of this new potential. So I'm assuming, and I think it's good to act on this thought, that as the crises on Earth are escalating and we hear that we don't have much time, and whenever has the human race voluntarily changed enough to deal with these enormous environmental, social, and financial crises unless we're pushed? There's no way we can do it. However, the speed up of what's being breaking down is actually being matched and possibly accelerated by the speed up of the connectivity of what's capable of being connected. And so as I studied all this, I began to study Ilya Prigogine, the study of dissipative structures. And one of the insights there that I got way back in the 70s was that the way nature takes these jumps is nonlinear, exponential interaction of novel elements. Nonlinear, that means it happens all simultaneously, exponential, very rapid speed up, of innovative, novel, or mutations in the biological field, and innovations in the human field, interaction quickly enough. And the system cooperates in its own self-transcendence. As it uses up more of its energy and dysfunctionality, everything that's rising is also converging. And so the insight is that we are very, very close to facilitating a nonlinear exponential connection of what's emerging. And it all has to be on the new media. And I have personally decided to upgrade myself from being a dinosaur in the noosphere to being a pioneer. And I think we should really learn how to use that social media. It's a threshold, and it's sophisticated, and it takes some learning. But when you learn it, that means every one of us is the news. We are the news. And we are the news makers if we learn how to communicate fast enough on that media. So I decided in 19, 1970, I formed the Committee for the Future, and I decided to see what would happen if we actually speeded up the connections of that which is emerging and creative. And that's when I did the 25 SynCon conferences. You remember that wheel up there? We built it in auditoriums. People went into the various sectors of the wheel, and they were asked three questions. What do you want to create? What's your vision? What do you most need to create it? And what would you like to share freely with others? We did it with gang leaders in Los Angeles. We did it with people in the nation of Jamaica drawing wheels on the seashore. We did it in ballrooms in Washington, D.C. I built wheels 25 times throughout 1970s, 25 conferences called SynCon. And what I learned was, no matter who the people are, if you put them in a wheel representing a whole system and invite people to say what they really want to create and look for common goals and match needs with resources within that whole system, there will be far more capability of people getting what they want than by opposition. It's really a simple, natural revelation. And we had it 25 times. And then I decided to see if I could take it one more step and put it into the political arena. So I made a decision to run for Vice President of the United States. And it was easy, it was 1984. And it was the year of the woman, and you could be an idea candidate, and anybody could do it. So I just announced to my friends I was running for Vice President. And I became an official political candidate. And my goal was to have my name placed in the nomination so I could make a speech at the Democratic National Convention in order to call for a peace room as sophisticated as a war room to map, track, and connect what's working in the world. It's a really good idea. It wasn't metaphysical, it wasn't theoretical, it was actually practical. And so what happened was these little positive future centers formed, and they began to go out into their communities, and they used the little SynCon wheel to look into what sector they wanted to do their work, what were their needs, what were their resources, and they formed little assemblies of the whole, basically, little town meetings in the round. And when it got time for me to go to San Francisco to the convention, I was told, "Now, honey, don't go to San Francisco. You have done a good job at the grassroots level. But if you go to a Democratic National Convention and you have no money, no media, and no passes to the floor, and you try to get your name placed in nomination, you'll just be humiliated. Don't do that." So I did, though. And the 10 of us went, and we didn't have passes to the floor. And I'm telling you this because of the amazing things that we can actually accomplish. So I was allowed in by the wife of the governor of Colorado, and she said, "You have 30 seconds to make a speech at the South Dakota caucus at 5:30 a.m. And I got myself into the Democratic National Convention with all my associates. And I had a 30-second speech, and Barbara Hubbard running for vice president to find out what's working in America. They signed up. And the first day we had 100 signatures, the next day we had another 100 signatures, and there were two women whose name was placed in nomination for vice president, myself and Geraldine Ferraro. When I was taken up to this platform that we had envisioned in all the yoga classes and small church basements in the United States, and all those positive future centers were sharing an intentional prayer that we could be heard from a global political platform. I had no political ambition. I wasn't expecting to be vice president, but I was expecting to be heard for these ideas. And when the guard took me up to the platform to make the speech, he took my arm and he said, "Now, honey, They won't pay any attention to you. They never do. You're saying it for the universe. And I said it like in good New Thought tradition. I hold these truths to be self-evident. All people are born creative. Endowed by our Creator with the inalienable right and responsibility to express our creativity for the good of ourselves and the whole world. And the purpose of the United States has been to liberate creativity. And we're going to build peace rooms, and we're advocating that people build a peace room in every country in the world. And in 4 years, we're going to find out that we're part of an emerging world. And of course, nobody paid any attention. And I sat down, but I think the universe did. I actually believe it can happen now. And I'm going to jump ahead just to the end of this year and then see what, tell you what just happened at the Church of the Heart the other night. Let's see, what time is it? What? How long have I been talking?
8:40.
8:40. So I should be finished now? I have to finish this part. All right, so as I started getting on to the Shift Network and teaching, Stephen Dynan, who's the CEO of Shift Network, said to me, I'd like you to teach a curriculum called Agents of Conscious Evolution. I took that map, starting from the mind of God all the way on up through the wheel and beyond. And he said, let's invite people to work together for a planetary shift on December 22nd, 2012. Let's plan to create a global team of agents of conscious evolution. And Stephen said, I will produce an event that would be to herald, to notice, to celebrate, and to connect what's loving, what's creative, and what's working in the world. And he said that we could work together with all groups, all organizations, and people everywhere who would like to affirm right where they are what they feel is emergent, creative, and loving. And whatever amount of connectivity we're capable of doing by December 22nd, 2012, could be called our first birthday. We had our first Earth Day in 1970 after the lunar landing. And Earth Day is obviously every year to have us aware and create our environment together. Birthday, coming right out of Earth Day, is to celebrate what's emerging, what's being born in us, what's growing in all of us around the world. And whatever we're capable of doing, the thing that has been so amazing to me as a visionary is that I'm no longer a visionary. I'm involved in the process of what we've all envisioned. It's here. It's happening, and it has a due date for at least to show up as much of the new news as we're capable of. And I'm very, very excited about this because we have formed a welcoming committee of various people around the world, like Jean Houston and Lynn McTaggart and Lynn Twist and Jack Canfield and James O'D, all of whom are global pioneers, networked like so many other global pioneers, networked throughout the system. And we were having a welcoming committee call the other day. And the intention of these people, one of them was Dot Maver and her work, Push for Peace. Her intention is by December 21st, 22nd, have 1 billion people on internet for peace. Lynn Twist has a new big website for 4 years ago. Her intention is 1 billion people taking a stand. None of this could even be thought of without the internet. And Neil Donald Walsh was on, he has an intention of 250 million people involved in a global conversation. And all of these people, and that was just one little group. And I said, do you realize we're scaling up? See, I'm used to, we're lucky to have audiences this big when we're going face to face. But when we were just on that little teleseminar with those few people, what could we do collectively? You see, it's just, you have to get it in your imagination. So my life's work is now to activate a planetary experience of what's emergent, what's created, and what's working, to make a contribution, to make the shift fast enough. So to contribute toward that shift in time so that the collapse foreseen can at least be gentled. I don't think anyone thinks we can avoid these dangers completely. It's like a birth. The baby has to change. But it can be totally violent and destructive, or it can be gentler. So I want to conclude with what happened the other night, just completely unexpectedly. I was invited to the Church of the Heart. It was like 3 nights ago.
And Wednesday night.
And I was Tuesday night. And tonight is Friday night. Okay, Tuesday night and Friday night. And there was a movie being shown, Daniel Pinchbeck's movie, 2012. And Barbara Fields, my dear friend, director of the Association for Global New Thought, he said, well, Barbara, I think we should go to this movie at the end because they'd like you to say a few words when the movie is over. And I said, I really don't want to do that. Nobody wants to hear somebody say a few words after a movie. No, I don't think I'm going to do that. But Barbara persuaded me, and I went. So, you know, how many people who were here were in that little Church of the Heart meeting? Quite a few. So I stood on the stage, and I really didn't have much of a message. I just started to talk a little bit about the crisis and the birth and all that. And so somebody said, well, Occupy Santa Barbara only went so far, and now we're a community wanting to connect, to collaborate, to co-create. And we're sort of seeking what is the next step after Occupy Santa Barbara. So I got really excited about that. And they created a circle of chairs. I got off the platform. I said, you can't do it. Standing here, people in rows. We have to do it in circles. So we created a circle right there. And I said, well, why don't we create a town meeting in the round? Using that wheel-like structure and invite people from the health field, from the permaculture, from the monetary democracy field, from all of the different fields to come together, form little clusters, just like we did at the SynCons, to say what they want to create, what they need, what their resources are, and just create vocational dating. Vocational dating is mingling to match needs and resources and find common goals. And as we started to talk, the moment of that invitation to discuss this was so exciting because I was thinking of all the Occupy movements that have hit a certain question. They're dispersing, they're doing very great work, but it was so wonderful when they came together, when there was a physical showing up of people. So I said, what would happen if Occupy Santa Barbara became Evolve Santa Barbara?
Yes.
What would happen if we attempted synergistic connectivity of what's creative and what wants to merge to be more creative here in Santa Barbara and created a little model of it? So people said, that's an interesting idea. And when I arrived here, Bruce Schumann had made a beautiful template, and there are little tiny cards called Evolve Santa Barbara on it. And it has a website. All right, and Penny, would you please stand up and show that? There she is. This is Penny Little. This happened today. Penny Little is the one who invited me, and I said, Penny, well, I could be an elder
you
of
are.
The new. But you could be the one doing it. So what happened there, I'd like her to just, would there be anyone interested in getting this little card and possibly helping to create collaboration on a community level? Occupy Santa Barbara, evolve Santa Barbara.
What's
the website?
Okay, it's sharedpurpose.net. It's a temporary thing. Bruce put up a registration form where you can put your name, your email, contact, and some of the things that you're interested in. And that's the simple start to it because we're evolving. And this is just, we're like at this moment in time, this is an idea whose time has come. And so I have these, and I think Bruce has some of them, and we'd really like you to take them home and to act on it, and to, if you're interested in participating and creating a new society here in Santa Barbara, being a model for the world we really want to live in. So,
what I'm going to do now is stop talking. And we're going to have a break, I think. Is that right, Sherman? And then if anybody would like to discuss this after the break, you can write your questions or write your comments on those little pieces of paper, and we'll just have a dialogue about what people want to create, because that's what's exciting to me now. Thank you.